On this episode of the 8-Bit Files, we're going to talk about our holiday experiences with 8-bit computing, video game consoles, and some of the latest news that we've heard as we roll into this holiday season. This will be our last episode of the year, and we're going to maybe talk about some things we're going to talk about in the new year as well. So let's get into it.
The 8-Bit Files with Dave and John.
So Dave, let's talk about the holiday traditions that we have. This is something that you suggested we talk about, and I think it'd be kind of a fun sort of nostalgia trip for us to talk about these things. Mm-hmm. And we've got a bunch of other topics we want to talk about. So this is going to be kind of a mixed bag episode, not on one specific topic, but but definitely, I think Christmas is important for a lot of folks' nostalgia when it comes to their first home computer, their first video game console, any of those types of things. So typically, you would get, at least for an 80s baby, a 70s baby, I guess. But in the 80s, you would typically get your things at Christmas or your birthday. It's funny. I've been trying to think about all the things that I've gotten, and we've talked about a number of them, and they've all been given to me at Christmas.
Yep. Funny how that works. So, I mean, it's almost like the fabric of our lives, as far as benchmarking, I remember I got this on this Christmas. I got my Commodore 1702 monitor on this Christmas. Like I can look back and, with a chronology of all the Christmases, at least a certain number of them. So let me ask you this. What is your first Christmas, memory that is connected to technology or computers of any way or any shape or form?
Well, I've already told this story, but I'll tell a abbreviated version of it. For sure. And that was my Atari 800 XL, my 8-bit computer. There was other computers that came before that, but they weren't directly tied to Christmas.
Yeah.
But the Atari 800 XL, and again, the story was that I begged my mom for probably a year to get an 800 XL, or whenever they announced it, I wanted it. And she kept leading me down this path of misery, saying she was going to get me a 600 XL. And it even went so far as me unwrapping the gift that I found hidden in a closet to confirm I got an 800 XL. So
I remember. Yeah.
That was mine. Cause my grandfather gave, I guess the family, but technically me, cause no one else cared or knew how to do anything with it. A TRS-80 Model 3 computer. That was really my first in-home computer. But I don't think that was tied to Christmas. I think he was just visiting from another province, and he just happened to have it and gave it to us. So
yes,
not Christmas related per se.
Got it. Well, I can liken my first Christmas 8-bit experience to, again, some of the memories aren't tied to Christmas, like receiving the Commodore 64 that I received from my parents that they got for me was in the summertime, on my birthday, like midway through the year. But the first Christmas, like after had the 64 for 6 months or whatever it was, the first Christmas, my parents bought me that 1702 monitor, the original monitor that I had when I was a kid. And I also asked for a game, which ended up being Kickman. I don't know if you know the game Kickman, if you can even picture it, or it involves like a clown guy sitting on a unicycle. You know what I'm talking about?
I think I do. Yeah. Although I was remembering like a seesaw or like a teeter totter kind of thing.
I'm sure we're thinking of the same game, because there's actually an arcade version. So this is a game that was released on cartridge for the Commodore 64. The Commodore released a bunch of cartridge games. This was one of the games, and I didn't have a disc drive back then. I only had the tape drive. So my parents got me the monitor, which would have been a big ticket item, right? Like the monitor would have been probably a $300 item back then.
It's a TV, and a TV was a big deal back in those days. Yeah,
absolutely. And a darn good TV too. I mean, over my shoulder, there's one right now, right? Like, I mean, these things freaking last forever, but, So I remember, though, here's the funny thing. I remember asking or thinking, I thought I was asking my parents for Jumpman. Or sorry, in my mind, Jumpman was the game I wanted. But then
Right.
I asked them to get me Kickman because that was what we had in the store in, the hometown or whatever,
You'll
presuming.
take what you can get. Yeah.
That's right. But the thing is, I probably in like a Compute magazine, I read the description of what Jumpman was, swinging, grabbing onto vines and avoiding this and that. Very exciting, right?
Yeah.
Kickman, balloons landing on your head, not so exciting, right? And but ultimately, I remember like before breakfast was served Christmas morning, hauling that monitor into my bedroom, connecting it up. I was going from a black and white CRT TV, which I would love to have today, by the way,
Yeah.
right? Of course, connecting that color monitor, and man, oh man, it was a magic. And I can still hear, and I'll still fire up that game on Christmas morning. But that's the first, real, computing 8-bit related memory I have of as connected to Christmas.
Well,
So
it's funny. This kind of started up a different memory. Maybe it wasn't the Atari 800XL was my first. I think now that I think about it, my sister and I both collectively got one big gift, and that was the 2600. But this is when I was living up north, and we had very limited options because everything's ordered through the Sears catalog. And as we've talked about the fact that Sears actually had their own video gate arcade system, which was basically a version of the 2600, just rebranded for Sears. And I'm pretty sure that was the one that I got. And I'm pretty sure my sister was not very happy about sharing that with me because she didn't really care about video games, and she was just felt like she got ripped off and she didn't get whatever
her own
Cabbage
gift.
Patch or whatever she was supposed to get at, that Christmas in its full extent, because she had to share this gift with me. From a financial standpoint, her parents split the difference and just bought one big thing for the two of us. So
I
but
can see that. I can see that. Was your sister older or younger than you?
she's younger than me.
Younger. So, but either way, the sibling rivalry, right? Like, that's pretty. That
But
reminds
ironic.
me of a,
Oh,
yeah,
go ahead.
ironically, no, ironically, go ahead.
The funny thing was is that my sister was probably the more competitive of the two of us, but the sort of the dark horse in the running was the fact that my mom became a huge Atari 2600 gamer, as we've mentioned before, and she was racking up the high scores everywhere, and it was like I had to fight her for it, not my sister.
So we can imagine you guys, but Christmas Day, if this was a Christmas gift, as you recall, you've been playing combat all day long then. Is that what the Sears one shipped with too? Was that the pack-in game for the Sears version too?
I'm pretty sure it was, and I think we probably got Pac-Man, the crappy version. So, just because I think my mom really liked Pac-Man, and I remember she also got me the same Christmas. She got me all of the branded merch that was Pac-Man branded. Like I remember having a TV tray, and I don't know if it was the 2600 Christmas or if it was like a following Christmas, but she got me a wristwatch that actually had Pac-Man on it. It was a little LCD display, and there was like
Joystick, right?
little
Like a,
joystick that would connect to the side of the watch, and then you would like take it off, and then you click it into the joystick hole, and then you can
Totally.
actually play it. And actually, it was pretty decent, and I was pretty popular at school with that watch.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I'm
So
sure that
I
watch is
remember.
probably worth a lot of money now.
I'm just gonna say that. I remember seeing that watch in at the like Woolworth's department store or whatever it was in my hometown there. And I think there was a Space Invaders similar watch too. Like there was a few. There were a few. Yeah, those things would probably be worth a few bucks right now.
And they probably none of them have the joystick.
That's right.
It
Well,
was
I know
probably the
someone
first
who
thing
could
that
3D print one though. Like,
this is true. This is true. It's not that hard of a print. It's a very small print.
That's awesome. Well, so like I so my 64 setup, I guess it sort of graduated over the series of a couple. There's maybe one or two more Christmases. No, I got the disk drive at my birthday the following year, so that doesn't count for Christmas. But then I got a printer for Christmas. Christmas 84, it probably would have been. Getting a printer was pretty exciting. Although, I was the only
was
nerd
it though?
in school. Yeah,
well, yeah. No, I mean, for nerds, for sure, but yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're right. It doesn't sound exciting to the layperson, but it actually was back then. Like, you know, being able to, then that's what, you know, inspired a generation of printing greeting cards for family with print shop, right? Which you
right.
and I have talked about,
right?
Like, yes. quite a bit. But this printer, I'm sure we've talked about this one before, but it was the MPS 801, the Commodore MPS 801 printer, which famously didn't. We've talked about this, but the descending characters, like the lowercase g, for example, didn't descend. It would
yes.
actually, so it looked like a nine,
yeah.
Right? So. Not so good, like my English teacher probably, or whatever, school teacher. But just the fact that there was any kid submitting his homework in school on something that was printed, which of course nowadays would be laughed upon, but back then it was very it was quite, I was considered to be the nerd for having that, but I can still hear that printer grinding away, that MPS 801.
Oh yeah, that grinding sound to go along with the grinding sound of your dial-up modem.
Exactly. And yeah, exactly. But, you know, I mean, I remember my dad ordering that printer for me, and I'm assuming it had to come from the big city. We were in the small town, and I remember him on the phone, because I guess there was a delay, and he was trying to be ambiguous about it because we were sitting at the dinner table, because he didn't want to. So, and he's like, oh, it's got very delicate equipment that we're trying to ship. And because it was like the shipping company, there was like a ship problem with the transport or something. Anyway, it arrived. And anyway, it was the irony, or the coincidence, maybe it's a coincidence, is the box, like the MPS 801 printer box. When I went to my dad's house, he still lives in the same home that I grew up in. He had the box. The box was sitting there in his house. Why would he have the box? Just, I don't know. It's kind of funny. So I took the box. I had to take it, right? I mean, that's a collector item. So I actually used that box. I had a bunch of Commodore 64 motherboards, or like main boards, repaired by a fellow named Frank at this company called Retro Rewind, which in Toronto, in the Toronto area, fantastic guy. I shipped the boards back and forth using the MPS 801 box. and so it actually went back and forth across Canada a couple of times, and it was beat to just, you know, to shreds by the time it got back. But I eventually tossed it. But I thought that was kind of a funny way to bring it all full circle, right?
Awesome.
True story. So those are some childhood Christmas memories related to computing. Maybe fast forward a little bit to any, you know, more recent memories of acquiring technology around the holidays.
I think for people like us, I think a lot of our friends and family know that we're kind of into these types of things.
Yeah.
So we tend to get a lot of gaming nostalgia kind of related gifts. And I remember a couple years ago, I think it was an ex-girlfriend gave me used to be a really great website called thinkgeek.com.
Yeah.
And they just had like the most interesting and crazy fun gifts for nerds. And they don't exist anymore, although I think some of their stuff lives on in other sites and stuff like that. And, you know, there's probably variations on Amazon and stuff like that now. But back in the day, this was all probably at the beginning of Amazon when they were still doing books. she got me it was a light switch upgrade it was for my second bedroom, because it wouldn't work on my main bedroom, because there was multiple switches, but I needed to put it somewhere there was one switch, and it needed to be a very specific kind of switch. But it was basically a little arcade controller. It was a joystick up and down, and then two fire buttons, and the up and down was the action that you would do to turn on the light. It was just a mechanical connection to the actual light switch itself.
Yeah.
But if you had batteries in the box, when you press the arcade buttons, it would play different sound effects, which was super nerdy and super fun. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And I have it somewhere still, but I've since taken it off of that, that room, because that room was rented out at some point to a roommate friend. And
Hey, those were the days, man. Those were the days, right? That's what you had to do, what you had to do, right? Yeah. Rent out the room when we had multiple roommates all the time. What about, so what did it play? Like Pac-Man, Wagga Wagga? Like what would it?
No, it was more like the sounds you would hear like playing Space Invaders, like that.
Yeah.
Pew, pew, pew. Yeah, yeah, the pew, pew sound. And I think one of the buttons would do like explosions, but it was all like 8-bit quality.
That's awesome, man. That's freaking awesome. You got to track that thing down.
Oh, I'm sure it's in my garage with the rest of my hoard.
You know what? I'm sorry. I got to go back in time. Because I wanted to move forward in time because we don't have a lot of time for, we don't have hours and hours to record. But I remember when I was 8 years old, I went back to Windsor, Ontario, which you probably know, you may not know, but it's actually south of Detroit. Windsor, Ontario. Windsor shares the border, right, with Detroit.
Right.
Have you been through that border before?
I have.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, you've been to Detroit, right?
So many times, yes.
Yeah. So my mom grew up in Windsor, and so we'd go back to visit my grandma, quite frequently. So like for Christmas. So this was like when I was like 9 years old, 8 years old, or whatever. So that was when handheld electronic devices were starting. You know, this is like 1978, 79. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have any inkling of a computer at that point. But so I got this handheld, it was like a handheld game meant to teach math skills, basically, called Dataman.
Oh, yeah.
Very impressive. Yep. I might have even talked about it before, but.
Yeah.
But I remember literally like sitting, you know, spending hours and hours lying on my grandma's sofa. That was our Christmas gift that year. We went back there for Christmas, and I remember like learning my like multiplication tables basically in like grade 2 or grade 3 or whatever I was, and enjoying every second of it. Like it was really something else to have this device. Like it was really, I still have it actually too. It's one of the few things I kept from that era. So
do you remember the, I think it was like in kind of in the shape of an owl.
Yes.
You know, it was the math professor or something
totally.
Like that.
Exactly. Yes.
I had one in my garage, and and it's been there for probably 10 or 20 years. And my fiance is a math teacher, so I gave it to her.
Bring it school? Did she bring it to school?
Yeah, well, that's why I gave it to her, because I figured she'd want to maybe give it to some students. And I had never really looked into how it actually worked. I just got it because it was cool and retro, and there was a bunch of other stuff that it came with. So, But I finally Googled it fairly recently to see, you know, how does this actually work? And there's no like workbook or anything like that. You just basically are meant to put in sort of, 1 + 2, and then you press the equals, and then you press 3. Mm-hmm. And then the LED will light up red or green if you got the
answer. If it's right or wrong. Nice.
So it's like, that's actually kind of brilliant. If you don't know how to do math. I should have used that a long time ago, and I might have, you know, passed high school math, the one class I failed. So she took it to school, and she's letting some kids play with it now. And I think that's kind of awesome that it's something so simple, and that it's, you know, probably at least 20 years old, if not more, and it still works.
That's awesome. I think the Speak and Spell was from that same era too, was it not? Like, is that kind of similar?
Yep.
Is it the same company? Maybe even I don't know.
Maybe, perhaps. Maybe, yeah. Maybe I have one in the garage. But I got it for different reasons. I got it for my synth stuff, because you can make
right.
Sounds.
Exactly. That's awesome. Well, I'm gonna, in the interest of I'm the timekeeper today, in the interest of moving things along, to talk about my more modern Christmas 8-bit experience. Like really what got me interested, or not interested, but re-engaged in, well, actually it wouldn't have been re-engaged in retro. It would have been engaged in retro,
right.
I guess. It was when the Commodore 64 Mini came out about 4 or 5 years ago, when it was released, when it was announced, a few months before the holidays, I knew I had to get one for sure. So I bought it for myself for Christmas, gave it to my wife to wrap it for me. Right. So I received it as a gift. I think
it's surprise.
Exactly. But honestly, the anticipation though was fun, right? Like the anticipation was fun.
Well, you have amazing willpower. And we'll talk about why yeah. in a minute, but
yes,
but the fact that you can buy something for yourself for Christmas and then yeah. have it wrapped and put under the yes. tree and not touch it for weeks. I run home from it. Work to get stuff that gets delivered by the post person and I can't wait. So,
yeah, I know I'm weird that way, but I think, part of it too is, happy wife, happy life. She feels that she's, you know, can keep me in, you know, I don't know. There's a certain, but I almost ripped the package. So no spoilers. I almost ripped that package open. We'll talk about that later. I almost ripped it open. But going back, the 64 mini, when it like for me, I wasn't really into emulation. I had certainly had no original hardware or anything. In fact, I had nothing practically like at all. I wasn't really engaged in the hobby in any way, shape or form in terms of retro. And when the 64 mini came out, it just really ignited something for me. And of course, and from there, it just led, so that was a Christmas. I remember being so excited and jacked up. And say what you will about a cheap emulation box, which is what some people in the community, but I mean, it's just what it symbolizes and what it just re-engages everybody
if it's done well. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, the community might have their opinions of that particular box, but it sparked your interest and that mm-hmm. I think that achieved the, you know, sort of the goal of them sort of bringing back this nostalgia and
100%.
And definitely even our podcast is solely targeting nostalgia from people that are similar ages and things like that. And it's one of those rare things that just brings you joy when you walk past it and you see it and you think about using it. So totally.
And what this all comes down to for me too, is I've learned in recent years to give when it comes to Christmas, is to give myself something to look forward to and enjoy on that particular day, like something very selfish, right?
Yeah.
So self-indulgent. Which in that year was the 64 MIDI, and this year, switching to talk a little bit about this Christmas, I actually my son or wife will never listen to this podcast in a million years anyway, so I can spoil this. So Jonah, my kid, he's a video gamer like most teenagers are, or at least, you know, as far as I know. So he's been an Xbox kid his whole life. He has every generation of Xbox literally on his desk, like just around the corner. But he expressed interest. He said, "Dad, I'd like to get an old PS4 for Christmas, or like an old PlayStation, like a PS4 for Christmas, so I can try some of the games." Like he's interested in the racing genre, like driving car simulation, more of the simulation style racing games, car racing games. He said, "I'd like to try some of these games." The more recent game. So long story short is I sourced him a PS4, cheap, right? Like obviously, I mean, but they still carry a bit of a premium, mind you, but I found a decently priced used PS4. Now I just got to find him the games to go along with it, basically. But that's one of his Christmas gifts this year. So he'll be, you know, pretty excited about that.
And what did you get yourself?
We'll save that. Well, it's a good question. So for myself, okay, we'll spoil it. I got myself a Fujinet device for the 800 XL, which was acquired this year. Thanks in no insignificant way to yourself for having made that happen. So I'm really looking forward to the Fujinet that's going to be my Christmas Day activity is, firing that up and getting it online and having a go with that. So
we'll have to play some Pac-Man or some Texas Hold'em right. together
nice.
on
nice.
Our Ataris, just like when nice. We were seven right. or eight.
Right.
when I was, because, be...
yeah,
know,
yes.
of course, back then we couldn't interoperate between the Commodore 64 and the Atari. So
But it will be fun to try out some of those capabilities, right? Like,
for sure.
I'm looking forward to that for sure. What about you? Anything? What's on your Christmas wish list this year, John?
I don't really have anything, because a lot of the stuff that I'm interested in has either come out or already, and I could never wait till Christmas. Like, I did, I did buy myself one of those Atari 50th anniversary little arcade little arcade machines, like the little tiny ones. I forget what it's called then. Maybe the box is here. Box is right here, so I can tell you. It is the fully playable. It's from My Arcade. It's the Nano Player Pro.
Right. So, yes.
And it's, you know, for what it is, it's super fun. And I think it was only like $30 or $35 on Amazon. Yeah,
that's a nice little.
It was kind of a no brainer, and it has 75 games in it. And is it actually playable that well? Kinda, but you know, I don't care. I just like the. It's just a fun thing to have on my, you can probably see just over my shoulder. I have a little display case full of like handhelds and some retro arcade machine shaped objects of various sizes and vintages. So this for me will probably, there's still batteries in it. I might still play it a little bit, but then it'll probably take the batteries out because you want to save these electronics, and I'll just lock it away in my little cabinet. And, it's just awesome. A fun little thing. You know, we had talked about in the past the 2600 Plus. I had ordered it on Amazon, and then I canceled my order because I wasn't convinced that it was going to give me anything I didn't already have. I still want it. Do I need it? No. I have I've since re-upped my 2600 console count to, I think, 4, thanks to some auction purchases.
Yes.
And I have a Harmony cart, and I have a Raspberry Pi 4 with a fully tricked out Battlestar image that has literally every single game ever made on it. So I can play it wirelessly on HDMI in 4K and on my TV. So, but the interesting thing though, and this is like, I guess, a kind of a segue to some other topics as we round the half hour point on this conversation, is the 2600, you know, there was a lot of questions about, will it support other things? Will it work with the Harmony cart? And there's been two interesting developments for the 2600 Plus since we last talked about it. And one is that there is a way to use a Harmony cart on the 2600 Plus. And it's basically by just plugging the Harmony cart through via its USB port to your computer and going into sort of the menu system and switching it to developer mode, and then basically picking a specific ROM to boot on that. It turns it into a single use cartridge then. I mean, it's obviously reversible. You just have to plug it into your computer and change which cart it's loading.
That's a step. It's a step forward, right? It's a workaround. It's fine.
The interesting thing with, you know, that angle, the worst case scenario is it allows you to use like paddles with Kaboom, for example. If you didn't already have that set up, you could then use that or any of the other unique controller options, if they're compatible with the 2600 Plus, which is a whole other conversation. But I just, it's nice to see that aspect has sort of been addressed, and I'm sure people are hounding the developers to do something to make it so you don't have to do that step. And then the thing that we both just saw in the last couple of days is that the firmware has been basically hacked to a degree, and they're able to, the same folks that sort of unlocked the box for the C64 Mini are behind the 2600 Plus firmware, because apparently it's made by the same company, and it's probably very similar architecture and how it works. They basically have announced that they're working on that. I don't know if it's been anything's been released yet or not. Do you?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything, but my thought, like my general philosophy on this. So having gone through the C64 Mini and enjoyed like it a lot, there were competing. You have of course official firmware updates from the manufacturer.
Yeah,
but then there were third party, basically, I guess hacks to the actual like official firmware that right. would give, you know, mod the carousel and do all kinds of different things. And I found with some of those unofficial firmwares or unofficial, I forget, there are several, there seemed in my mind to be several options anyway. For me, I'd rather stick with the official firmware and see what they're going to do with that. Like I don't need to, like when it comes to the Atari 2600 Plus, we anticipate that there will be actual firmware updates from Atari, yeah. right, in air quotes, that will give us additional functionality. I know that some of these C64 Mini firmware updates, the unofficial ones or the unofficial mods, basically, it wasn't easy, or there's some of them, there was no real way to refer back or to do a reset back to the original firmware. And mm-hmm. So I'd prefer to rely on the official firmware releases more than the third party ones and the hacks, but you know, either way, it's exciting to see like that these developments are taking place. And there's no doubt, like you and I agree that there's traction on this, right? Like I think that, mm-hmm. you know, it makes the device a little bit more appealing for sure to myself. I think there's a future. There's, you know, it's definitely going to go places.
Yeah. It's just always interesting to see people talk about these types of things, because there's some people that are up in arms because, you know, that's piracy, you know, you're making it so you can put stuff on there, and then people start trotting out the same old, well, I've got the cartridge so I can do what I want with it, you know, kind of thing.
I'm pirating Yar's Revenge, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, no. No, I don't.
Well,
I
mean, the thing is, sounds like what this firmware has enabled, this hacked firmware, is that you can actually dump cartridges.
Yeah.
So you have the ability to then pull it down off of this device. So that, I think, you know, has the potential to jeopardize some of the future updates to the 2600 from Atari, because they, you know, they've just released a bunch of games for the first time in like decades on cartridges for the 2600. So that's obviously true. If that firmware gets out there, or, you know, any of the homebrew stuff gets in there that shouldn't be released in any other format. You know, some of these homebrew people, they spend a lot of time and money to make actual cartridges so that, you know, they don't have to just give away their work, and they can make a few bucks off of it to pay for their efforts. But the reality is that this is always going to happen. And every time a device comes out, look at us talking about the 2600 and hacking it, like the original, you know, let alone all the computers and everything else that we've talked about and things like
that's true.
OODINET. I mean, this stuff is just going to continue to happen, and no one's going to be able to stop it because they're afraid of piracy or something like that. But it also, I mean, and there's also no shortage of other ways of doing this same thing. The nice thing about the 2600 Plus is that it's legitimately from Atari. It's quite a beautiful little box, and the logo lights up, which is really kind of cool. You know, I think it might be worth picking up at some point. For me, it's still not, but I think some people definitely that don't have access to the other stuff that you and I do, they're going to grab it, or they're, you know, significant others are going to grab it for them for Christmas or some other gift reason. And having expanded firmware options is only going to make the thing more desirable. Yeah. So
I agree. And I also have to say, like the whole homebrew community, particularly the 2600 homebrew community, most games are, released solely on cartridge, like the newer games. They don't actually have electronically distributed versions of a lot of these new games. I've noticed it quite, because I I'd like to spend $10 or $20 buying certain games, but I understand there's the whole piracy aspect of things. And a lot of these carts too, I think they rely on particular hardware on the cartridge itself in order for the game to actually like function mm-hmm. properly anyways. So, yeah. so that, I think that's also a part of things. And yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned that because that is probably the more expensive part of developing mm-hmm. a game is just yeah. delivering it on a cart, yeah. especially, you know, it might be a $10 or $20 game. Like they're not going to charge $60 for the cartridge, you know, when you can get a Switch title for half that. Yeah. But the interesting thing is the developer behind the Pico cart for the Atari 8-bit, he's just created a very simple and elegant solution based on some community feedback about wanting to be mm-hmm. able to have a single boot option on the Pico cart, which is the, for the Atari 8-bit computers, it's basically, it's a Raspberry Pi Pico, or at least a clone of one that you can get for less than $2 on AliExpress, and a very inexpensive printed circuit board that you can have manufactured for literally nothing. And essentially he's created an auto run script that doesn't even require any changes to the firmware, so that you can basically select how that cartridge will boot up. And some people have expressed interest in actually releasing commercial software that way, because it's mm-hmm. a very elegant and inexpensive way of doing that instead of having to create something custom mm-hmm. For that. It's also something that potentially would be very easy for whoever purchases said system or game to, you know, undo that. But that's a whole other can of worms. But it's just interesting to see how some of these interesting open source projects have sort of been evolving even since we've been talking about them, because like the Pico card is something that I really love, and I know you've been enjoying it. And somebody just created some really nice, like really slick Atari-esque labels for it. And so I'm going to send you, Dave, the PDF, but our listeners can just go to the just search on Pico cart on the Atari Age forums, and you'll find the very large thread about it. But there is this really great sheet of labels that you could just print off on your printer, or, you know, take it somewhere and get it printed. And it looks very 8-bit computer labels. Nice. For the Pico cart. And, you know, this dual boot option is really kind of clever too. So, or single awesome. Boot. Yeah. So
it's just so great to see like, these projects evolve into be, I mean, there's a really fairly active community around this particular project as well. From
it's funny, like I have tracking notifications on a couple of these threads on the Atari Age forums, and I swear, like I wake up and there's like 50 new posts on mm-hmm. one topic that I've been tracking. And then, you know, throughout the day, there's another 50 to 100, because it's a very, very large community and a very active mm-hmm. community, which is really cool to see. I'm going to switch gears just a little bit. Mm-hmm. We're still kind of in the retro emulation-ish kind of realm. But you know those GameStation Pros that have been popping up from My Arcade?
Yep. The Atari. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It's basically an emulator that has you have the ability to use an SD card to save your state of the game. And then people mm-hmm. realize that you could actually inject your own ROMs into the system. And one mm-hmm. of the neat things about it is it has this, you know, it's an HDMI out. So you plug it into your TV, and then has wireless controllers that have LEDs in them. And they also have, aside from having a stick joystick, they also have a little paddle, wheel.
Almost like a dial, right?
Yeah. Almost. Yeah. It's almost like a spinner, but it's not quite mm-hmm. as fluid as that, you know? Mm-hmm. I found out that one of the auction houses that's near me has been basically seems to be Costco's open box or returns depot, and they just sell off all this stuff. And they've been going for about $40 Canadian on this auction. And they've had like, I don't know, probably a couple dozen of these flow through there. So it's interesting, because apparently someone said on one of the Atari forums that they worked at Costco, and it was probably one of the highest returned bits of technology they've had in a while because people can't figure out how to get the controllers to pair properly with the game station.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it looks cool in the pictures I've seen, but as you say, the reviews are somewhat mixed on the controllers, but I'm kind of curious. I think at that price point, you know, I definitely, you know, I'd be willing to check it out just to see.
Well, but, I lost one the other day by $5. So maybe next weekend at the next auction, there'll be some more, but who knows? Just trying to think if there's anything else that I wanted to talk about. Oh yeah. Also on I think it was actually on Reddit that I read about something that someone asked about it. It might've been on like the retro gaming subreddit. Mm-hmm. There's a movie that's totally on brand for us that I've never heard of. But I ended up watching it today because of the Reddit post. It's called 8-Bit Christmas and it stars Neil Patrick Harris. It came out in 2021 and it's basically a Christmas story, but instead of a red, what's it? What's the rifle in Christmas story? The BB gun? Oh. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah. I only know Peter Bill. That's Peter Billingsley, right? The movie.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I know.
Instead of a rifle being the gift or the thing that everyone's trying to get, this movie centers around and it's set in the 80s around getting a Nintendo Entertainment System for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And they do a really, I mean, it's definitely a kid's movie. It certainly has that kind of a aesthetic, a little mix of A Christmas Story, a little mix of Home Alone kind of thing. But it's about the trials and tribulations of this boy trying to get a Nintendo with his parents, not liking it. His town has basically banned video games, but the draw of him getting a Nintendo is the common theme, and he has numerous attempts at acquiring one. And so it's a fun little thing to check out. I think it's on HBO Max. I don't know what streaming service you would find it on in your country, but that's the service that I saw it on.
What year is that set in? Did they indicate what year?
It was the 80s. I can't remember, like 83, 84, whenever it first came out. And one of the common threads that we've talked about is that there's always one kid that has all the money and all the toys. And so this one boy, his dad is like the local doctor or something like that. And so they have a really lavish house and his rec room is, the arcade of your dreams kind of thing. And he would have every morning or every day after school or on the weekends, he would hold court in his front yard and he would pick 10 people to come in and play video games with him. And it was like, almost like this Hunger Games kind of thing to get in there to play that. And then when he got the power glove, forget about it. It was just, anyways, it's actually quite a lot of fun. The more I think about it, the more I'm upgrading my review of it because it is kind of fun. And they did a really good job with sort of the nostalgia, but anyways, it's just kind of funny. I'd never heard of it, but I guess it came out sort of during COVID and stuff. And, and so I missed it, but I'm glad Reddit sort of brought it back to the surface and definitely seemed to be some mixed reviews about it there, but I think it's cause it's old dudes, watching it, not necessarily.
Right on. Well, I'll have to check that out. Give us something to do over the holidays rather than watch Home Alone for the 17th billionth time.
or Elf.
So my other holiday plan, before we wrap up is I've got one of those, small form factor desktop PC boxes. Remember, I think I mentioned before that I had one that died and I confirmed that it was a hardware problem. A month and a half later, I eventually got a replacement for it. But in the meantime, I replaced that computer like with a proper computer for myself to use for the original purpose. So now I have this extra machine that I got in the return. So I'm planning on turning it into a retro, like an emulation box, basically that I will connect to like a TV, like via HDMI, and I'll dedicate it to that purpose. I don't currently have any PC dedicated to like just to emulation, and I can also move a couple of things off of some of my other machines to that machine that are all like personal retro slash like, you know, different emulators and like my ROMs archive and all that kind of stuff. I can sort of put everything on this machine, but I'm curious to try, you know, a couple of different interfaces. Retrobat. Have you heard of Retrobat? It's like another, it's a emulation station, you know, integrated, you know, environment, which looks like it's looks interesting. I might try just building it myself and not going with a prefab image. Like I'd like to try like on this machine because it's powered enough, you know, decently powered computer, modern computer. I want to build out my Dreamcast library a little bit and maybe check out some of the Dreamcast games of old. Even though I have a Dreamcast, I have an original Dreamcast, I don't have an SD card solution for that because they're very expensive. And also because it just isn't something that, you know, I necessarily need to do. But I don't want to rely on the optical drive in the Dreamcast for loaded games. So I think I'd like to lean on a emulation solution for that. So, and also I think this thing will do PS2 pretty well. Like the hardware should do PS2. I've never explored the PS2 library ever. I don't know anything about it. So it might be kind of fun to do that. So anyway, that'll be a fun project to look into.
You should consider putting EmuDeck on it because they now have a public beta of that for Windows.
There you go.
So then you and my Steam Deck can be friends.
There you go. That's actually not a bad idea. I remember you mentioning that there was a Windows version in the works for that.
I think it just boils down to what kind of interface do you want to have like when you boot it up. Mm-hmm. Like that's one of the nice thing about the Raspberry Pi solutions is that it's a purpose-built image, for example, and then you have the ability to, you know, add your own ROMs and stuff. But essentially some of them are just stunning. Like you can't believe this wasn't a commercial product. In some cases they are commercial products, that some of these front ends that you can get, especially for Windows machines, are just beautiful. Like they boot up and they have all the nice graphics and they have little animations and stuff like that. Like it really feels like a polished product, but you're basically running an emulation layer on top of everything, and actually makes like RetroPie and emulation station look
better.
Good. Well, I mean those are fine, and again, just for getting into the games, it's fine. But when you see some of these other things, these other emulation options, some of them are just stunning.
I understand what you mean now.
Like even Batacera, which I don't know if you want to put Linux on your machine. And I don't know if they have a Windows version of Batacera, but Batacera is a beautiful system that is similar to Emulation Station, but I think just it just takes it in a little different direction. And that's actually what my current Raspberry Pi 4 machine is set up with. And it's
Batacera.
It's just so slick.
Right. Well, this thing, I mean, there are other benefits to having a Windows machine to do other things with it too. But no, it's worth, I mean, at this point, I'm just looking for, it's a solution looking for a problem, having this computer lying around in the sense of it has no business value to me. It's just fun to have a machine to play, especially just get some wireless controllers, hook it up to the TV, the big TV, like I know you. Like to do it'll be a nice a nice fun thing to do.
And even some of these systems that are out there, you can actually put them on a thumb drive and just boot that computer, so you don't actually have to install
there
anything.
You
just have a thumb drive for whatever system you want to play with.
That's good. It should be give me something to do over the holidays. Now will I actually follow through on it? Well, if I can, you know, bury myself in the basement, away from all the, you know, holiday excitement for a few hours, I'll definitely give it a go if I can.
Yeah, me too. That's always the challenge is finding the time.
Yep.
That's the thing is I swear I spend more time collecting and finding these things than actually playing with them.
Yeah, of course. Of
but
course.
That maybe that's part of the attraction too, though. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the hunt. It's the thrill of the chase, right?
Yes. I don't know. Exactly.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we're running out of our time to record this episode, and I think we pretty much run out of topics. So we're going to wrap it up here. I wish everybody happy holidays, and we'll see you again in 2024. We've got some ideas for some other shows that we want to do in the new year, which we may or may not share now, but I don't know. Yep, what do you
no
think?
Spoilers.
No. No spoilers.
Well, no, we've got ideas, and really just to all those who take the time to listen to our podcast, we really appreciate your interactions. We've received feedback from so many of you over the course of the year, or the almost, well, I guess almost a year that we've been doing this. And definitely, it's been a real pleasure too, John, to do the podcast with you this year. And I hope we can continue as long as we're both interested in computers and 8-bit video games, right?
Yep. Yep.
We can keep going.
It's been especially cool to hear from the listeners. And sometimes those listeners are even people that make the stuff that we've talked about, and we haven't reached out to them specifically. They just found us magically. And I just think that's really cool. And that's kind of what makes the internet great sometimes. So
totally. Yeah. It's really nice to know that people are listening. And it gives us a chance to justify all the, you know, all the stuff that we got. So
in some way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Maybe not financially, because I'm sure.
No, not financially. That's right.
I think about how many times I bought Pac-Man as a game. Like I don't know how many times on different platforms and different you know, shapes and formats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you're right. All right. Well, maybe I'll go fire up original Atari Pac-Man right now. It's just to there have you, some fun.
There you go. All right, everybody. Have a good holiday, and we'll talk to you in 2024.
All right. Bye, everybody.